What's the difference? Simply, rules, boundaries, and limitations. And the fact that the dogs in my house are always active, fulfilled, and balanced. We have to remember that a dog's bark is something that early man encouraged in the wolf-like ancestors of modern canines thousands of years ago. The fact that a dog could alert them to danger in their camps, settlements, and farms was one of the many qualities of dogs that brought our two species together. In short, the reason dogs bark is as much our doing as it is theirs. Some people, especially people who live alone or in remote areas, want to encourage their dogs to bark every single time something new happens or someone unexpected stops by. Others prefer a loud dog with a tough territorial bark to scare away possible intruders. Then there are those who live in close quarters, apartment buildings or condos, whose dogs' chronic vocalizations could land them in deep trouble with the landlord or the neighbors. How many barks are too many? It's simply a matter of preference. But in my opinion, when it goes beyond four barks, it can turn into more than simply the alert to the pack that barking was intended to be. Obsessive barking can turn into a conversation, and the dog is really trying to tell you, I'm not happy with my life right now. I'm bored. I'm unsure. I'm frustrated. I'm not getting enough exercise. So the only activity I have available is to bark for 30 minutes. When a dog barks for extended periods of time, or barks at any little disturbance, it's usually speaking the canine language of anxiety or frustration. In my house, one bark is enough. That's it. One bark. In my pack, it's usually Coco the Chihuahua who will pick up on a strange presence, scent, or vibration, and then he will alert the pack. Once I tell Coco to be quiet, none of the other dogs will imitate his bark. But all the dogs will then indicate to me where the object or person or animal is coming from and how they feel about it by using body language. Different breeds will sometimes use different body language, holding one leg up or pointing, sitting down near the spot or lying down, standing in an alert posture or stalking. With 10 different dogs, you will have 10 different physical expressions of alertness, yet exactly the same energy. But it's my preference that there be no sound after that first bark. I'm telling the dogs, okay, you did your job. Now the humans will take care of this. I'm taking the load off their shoulders. With your new puppy, you make the call. Many barks, a few barks, or peace and quiet. But you have to start early. Since you have already taught your puppy to associate a certain sound or word with something you don't agree with, consistently correct using that sound. If your puppy's intensity level has escalated to very high, you may need to use a firm touch to snap her back to your attention. But don't stop there. Your puppy may pause and then go right back to what she was doing. She may be sitting back, but her brain is still on alert. Be patient. Wait until she completely relaxes before you go back to what you were doing. You can also reward with affection or a treat, but only after your puppy is completely quiet. If your puppy is barking over and over again at the same object, person, or place, then it's time to step up and claim that item as your own. Use your body, your mind, and your calm, assertive energy to create an invisible wall that your puppy is not allowed to cross. This kind of focused energy and body language is exactly what your puppy is looking for you to give her, a direction. But remember, with puppies, you have a chance to prevent unwanted barking before it becomes a habit or a chronic way of relieving stress. Common problem 4. Nipping, 24%, and mouthing, 19%. Nipping, or play biting, is something that puppies do with their litter mates, and it is a very instinctual behavior for them. It's a form of social interaction, as well as a playful practice for survival in the wild. In nature, a dog's siblings, mother, or older dogs in the pack will quickly teach her how hard is too hard. Junior loves to roughhouse with Mr. President and Blizzard, but if the pressure in their mouths gets a little too aggressive, he'll shut them down in an instant. It's important to keep in mind that a bite that a strapping adolescent pit bull finds to be too much would be extremely painful, perhaps even wounding to a human. Mouthing, like chewing, is a natural way for puppies to explore the world with their mouths. Neither behavior necessarily indicates an aggressive or dominant temperament. But if you constantly allow your puppy to play dominate you with her mouth while her harmless baby teeth are tiny and soft, she will learn to use it as a tool to control you when she's big enough to do some real damage. If allowed to continue, this playful biting from the pup often turns into serious aggression as an adult, warns breeder Diana Foster of her juvenile German Shepherds. He has now learned to use his mouth and teeth to get what he wants. With Blizzard, Angel, and Mr. President, I allowed them to explore my hands in the way they would naturally, but only using a soft mouth, no pressure allowed. When they would naturally start to increase the pressure and test the limits of my tolerance, I would gently but firmly cup their necks or the tops of their heads with my hand curved into the claw shape that mimics another dog's mouth. Then I would hold that position until they relaxed. It's natural for puppies to test limits, but it's just as natural for them to accept them. All I am doing is mimicking what their mother or junior or daddy or even another puppy would do in the same situation. It's important, however, that your timing be precise. Don't overcorrect. Don't pinch, and don't hold on too long after your puppy has relaxed, because she might interpret that as a further challenge. In attempting this exercise with your puppy, it may be helpful to wear a glove while playing to make sure you are relaxed and in control at all times. If you are worrying about your own discomfort or injury, you will be projecting a weak energy to the puppy, which she will naturally try to take advantage of. She will not respect any limits you set with her if you are in a weak or unsure state of mind. Puppies are instinctual. If they sense even a split-second gap in leadership, they will move in to compensate for it. Projecting constant, calm, assertive energy and a sense of confident leadership during the months of puppyhood is like buying an insurance policy so that you will continue to be respected in your dog's eyes for the rest of her life. Another advantage of using a glove when teaching your puppy bite inhibition is that you will avoid the common mistake of yanking or pulling your hand away when you sense the dog's teeth digging into your skin. This kind of motion triggers your puppy's prey drive and will only increase her excitement. Too much petting, longer than 5 seconds at a time, pulling the hands away quickly from the mouth and raising the hand in a repetitive motion above the dog's head, which is something children tend to do, will actually encourage play biting, says Diana. Once Blizzard moved in with the Barnes family, he quickly learned he could dominate Christian with his play biting for this very reason. Blizzard grew at a tremendous rate and was in danger of really hurting Christian. It was actually 14-year-old Sabrina who taught Christian how to stay calm during these incidents and how to make Blizzard submit to him before they continued their play sessions. Common Problem 5. Housebreaking Issues, 24%. We've already dealt with housebreaking earlier in this book, where I've indicated that housebreaking a puppy is not rocket science, because you've got nature working on your side. Most issues with housebreaking that I see occur because the owners didn't stick to a schedule, didn't properly sanitize areas where accidents occurred, and perhaps most important, got caught up in the emotion of a ruined piece of furniture or carpet. Your dog doesn't understand that you paid $1,000 for that sofa, but she does understand that you are in a highly unstable emotional state, that you are projecting strong negative energy, and that you are directing it right at her. In order to prevent this from happening, Don't even give your puppy the chance to create an accident of epic proportions in your home. Until you are sure of her elimination habits, keep her in a safe, contained, easy-to-sanitize area when you can't be directly supervising her. Use wee-wee pads if necessary, and always sanitize the area under and around the pads. Set her up for success, not failure. If you reduce the drama involved in housebreaking, you may be surprised at how easily it all comes together. With all the complaints I hear about the horrors of housebreaking, it's interesting to me that it's number 5 on the list of most common puppy problems, not number 1 or 2. I chalk that up to the fact that in America, people take the condition of their homes very, very seriously. They may be a little bothered by a puppy's jumping, nipping, or barking, but they absolutely positively refuse to live in a house that smells like pee or poop. They can live with a couple of bite marks on their hands, or a few complaints from the neighbors. But a stain on their prized oriental rug will make them immediately lay down the law. Is there any better evidence of the fact that a puppy can tell exactly how seriously we take the limits we set with her? With all these common problems, if you are on the fence about whether or not you are willing to set the limits necessary to correct them, your puppy will sense your ambivalence, and the unwanted behavior will continue. Common Problem 6. Not coming when called. 23%. First of all, we must remember that in your puppy's world there is no such thing as a name. Another dog's identity is its scent and energy, and has nothing to do with a sound. We give dogs names for our own convenience, and fortunately for us, dogs as a species are such natural masters of association that they quickly come to connect the unique cadence and syllables of a certain sound with what we want from them when we make that sound. At the Max Planck Institute for Evolutionary Anthropology in Germany, a border collie named Rico proved he could recognize the unique names of more than 200 different objects. Dogs don't reason, but one of the ways they constantly amaze is that they are simply brilliant at making connections. When a person says about a puppy, he already knows his name, however, it's not in the way a child would know his name. That is, assuming it as part of his identity or his me-ness. The dog understands its name relative to how, when, and why it is communicated. And most important, the energy with which it is communicated. When the Obama family named their puppy Bo, I was asked by many in the media, "Won't that confuse the dog? Because it rhymes with no." Perhaps, but it's also likely that as long as the name Bo was used in relation to positive things such as playtime, feeding time, walks, and praise or affection, he would have no trouble distinguishing it from a word used in relation to negative things such as no. A dog isn't a poet. It's not just the word he's concerned with. It's the energy behind the word that sends the message. This is one reason that I always instruct my clients to refrain from using a dog's name when correcting him. I use my dog's names when calling them, when praising them, and when we're playing or doing a positive challenge or exercise. Let's assume you are doing everything right, using your puppy's name only in a positive context, yet your puppy still doesn't come to you when you call her. It's not that your puppy doesn't want to come to you, or is rebelling, or challenging your authority. The number one reason why dogs don't come to people when they call is that their noses are more powerful sensors than their ears, and they are distracted by a fascinating scent. Remember, everything to a puppy is new and exciting. A new scent can so engage and mesmerize a puppy that to respond to a sound, far less interesting to him, just doesn't get through to him in that moment. If you yell out your young puppy's name over and over while she's being distracted by a scent, you run the risk of her associating that sound with the action of not paying attention to you. Remember, the energy you are projecting when you call your dog's name is what the puppy actually hears. If all the pup gets from you calling her name is, "I'm impatient. I want to get out of here. I'm frustrated with you," that is not a very attractive energy for her to follow. Dogs learn in the order nose, eyes, ears. In raising our friends Junior, Blizzard, Angel, and Mr. President, I followed the example of nature and used sound as little as possible in the beginning. Instead, I engaged their noses. This is especially effective with puppies. If I am walking Angel and his powerful terrier nose gets distracted by a scent, I will place a bully stick in front of him until it gets his attention, then walk away. I will start saying his name or making a positive kissing sound only when he is already coming toward me. That way, he begins to associate the name or sound with the action of following. This is what I hear when I'm following. The connection becomes clear and unambiguous. The next level of this exercise is done on a long lead, using sound and your puppy's automatic instinct to follow. Let your puppy wander away from you. Put your foot on the line to anchor it. Then turn your back to the puppy and walk away. As soon as he starts to follow you, turn toward him and call his name, or make the sounds that you want him to associate with coming. Reward him as soon as he reaches you. Practice using the positive sound or your puppy's name only during the natural times she is following you. When you get her out of the crate in the morning, while you are praising her during potty training, when you are calling her at mealtime, and when you are engaged in activities that she likes, make sure the energy behind the name is positive as well as calm and assertive. The more scent-oriented your dog, the longer it may take for her to understand that sound trumps scent when it is time to decide upon an action. But with a patient, dedicated owner, any puppy can learn to make that connection. In the meantime, carry a bully stick, scented item, or treat with you in order to get your puppy's attention. Try to think like a puppy and see the world as nose, eyes, ears, and eventually, your puppy can learn how to think like you. Common Problem 7. Digging, 21%. All dogs are natural diggers. Some dogs, such as the terrier breeds, have that extra boost in their DNA that makes their drive to dig even stronger. For them, digging can become their primary outlet for relieving stress, boredom, or anxiety. We need to provide for our dogs an outlet for this perfectly normal activity. The area where the new Dog Psychology Center is located is teeming with local wildlife. From the moment 2-month-old Angel arrived at the ranch, he began to fixate on my 4-year-old Jack Russell Terrier as Jack scoured the ranch for gopher holes. Angel's DNA was crying out in recognition. Digging. That's what I was born for. But despite the fact that Angel's ancestors were bred to dig for rats and other earthy rodents, I didn't want him to pick up catching gophers as a hobby. I needed to redirect his digging energy in a safer way while keeping his mind and his genes engaged. I have created a special area at the center for this very purpose. A tall sandy embankment, mottled with abandoned rodent holes, has become the official digging place for the dogs, where we do simple activities to fulfill that need in them. I'll take a tennis ball, focus the dog's attention on it, then stick it deep into the recesses of one of the small abandoned rodent holes in the bank. It's wonderful to watch the puppy's different breed-related talents and tendencies emerge when I do this simple exercise. Junior, with all his brawny pit bull might, will fly at the bank with all four paws, hurling giant chunks of earth behind him as if he were a bulldozer. He'll widen out the hole in no time flat, but in a totally undisciplined manner, all agitation and muscle, with very little focus. With Mr. President, it's easy to see why digging and retrieving buried treasure is not a bulldog's forte. He'll try to join in the excitement, But with his flat snout and large head, he can only clumsily poke inside the hole in the general direction of the hidden object. Angel, however, has been a digging star from day one. While Junior is still knocking himself out, trying to make the hole in the embankment bigger, and while Mr. President is looking around wondering if anyone is going to bring the ball back, Angel will simply slip into the hole like a trained Navy diver, disappear for a moment, then come out, proudly carrying the ball. For this, I reward him with extra praise and affection. It's important that he understand how proud I am of his ability, that I take joy in his joy, and that I'm nurturing the terrier instincts in him, but directing them in the right way. He is learning that we dig for balls, not for gophers, and we dig only for what the human wants us to dig for. This is prevention at its best. I know Angel is not going to dig up my Zen landscaping in the future, because I am already fulfilling his genetic need in a much richer, more entertaining way. If you have a terrier breed, or another breed with a powerful digging drive, or you are having problems with your puppy's obsessive digging, I suggest you section off an area in your garden or yard appropriate for your dog's or puppy's size. You can also provide a sandbox if it is deep enough. This will be the place where your dog can dig to her heart's content. Bury something interesting in the area, like a bully stick or a scented toy. Then bring your dog to the area and let her sniff. If she doesn't begin digging, start moving the dirt yourself, just a little bit. Eventually, she'll start to get excited and want to join in with you. If the area you can provide is very shallow, you can participate in the game and recover the area that your dog has already dug up, making it more challenging for her. Or you can just leave her to enjoy the adventure for herself, nurturing her achievement when she's brought you the buried object. After the exercise, replace the dirt, sanitize the object, and put the soil back the way it was before the dog began digging, to keep it interesting, as if every day it is still the first time anyone has ever dug in that space. The next step is showing your dog that your designated digging spot is the only place where she can practice this activity. After she has succeeded in her digging challenge for the day, bring your dog to your garden or any area that you want to be off limits. Put something in the ground, but block your dog immediately if she even attempts to come near. Direct her attention to you, and don't let her engage her nose, eyes, or ears. Use your body language to claim the area as yours. Then go back to the digging area and repeat the joyful digging exercise. Repeat this process a few times a week, or if your puppy has already lapsed into bad habits, every day, until it becomes clear to you that the puppy knows the rules, boundaries, and limitations of digging in her environment. If you live in an apartment, find an area in the park to practice digging exercises, or perhaps a dog-friendly beach. For digging activities indoors, Angel's breeder, Brooke Walker, provides her newborn miniature schnauzer puppies with a labyrinth of carpeted cat tunnels to nurture and fulfill their schnauzer's submariner needs from birth onward. When we fulfill our puppies' inborn needs from day one, we can actually prevent almost any troublesome issue from developing. Common problem 8. Won't walk on a leash. 20%. Angel has never had a problem with a leash in his short life, and one of the reasons for that is his very proactive breeder, Brooke Walker. She has her miniature schnauzer pups wearing colored bands made of paper at 4 weeks old, and introduces them to the sensation of the leash by 8 weeks. When I am walking my pack on the beach, people often come up to ask me questions because it's very unusual to see a woman walking 6 perfect miniature schnauzers, all well-behaved, all in formation. The other day, a woman came by with a schnauzer that was 6 months old and didn't know how to walk on a leash. Well, that's disgraceful. It turns out she got the puppy at a pet store, which absolutely explains it. A puppy purchased at a pet store at 6 months has waited too long and never really experienced the world. But walking on a leash, well, that's one of the first skills your puppy has to have. All my puppies are leash-trained by the time they leave my house. A puppy may be leash-trained when it comes to its new owners, but that doesn't mean the owners are leash-trained. When I saw the CNN news feed of the Obama puppy pulling little Malia all over the White House lawn, I knew that the first family had not taken the time to master the walk. Mastering the walk, which we touched on in Chapter 4, means having your puppy walking beside you, head up, with no tension on the leash between you and her. She is not pulling you or exhibiting the zigzagging behavior that we saw with presidential puppy Bo. Zigzagging, or what one of my more colorful clients calls fly fishing, is a sign of an overexcited dog. The walk should not signify excitement to a dog. It should signify structure. And the foundations of structure are laid in puppyhood. In nature, puppies know they have to follow their mother in a disciplined manner, or else they will get lost or left behind. In thinking you need a long lead in order to give your puppy freedom to explore out in front of you, you are actually working against Mother Nature. You can take breaks in the walk to allow for exploration time, as well as scheduling play sessions that involve supervised exploration in your yard or in the park. But there is absolutely no substitute for teaching your puppy to master a structured walk. As she learns to walk on her leash, however, you should expect certain behaviors from a very young puppy. Remember, everything is new to her. It is absolutely natural that she is going to get distracted by grass, by trees, by other dogs, by humans. At those times, she will pull on the leash, and that will create tension on it. If you pull back on the leash, you only increase the tension, which makes walking with you a stressful experience. Make sure the leash is high up on your puppy's neck. Carry it loosely, like a briefcase or purse. If your puppy sees something exciting and starts to move toward it, keep the tension loose, but continue in the direction you are going, focusing on keeping your puppy's head up. Use a scent, a treat, or a bully stick to engage her nose and keep her moving forward. Engaging a puppy's nose is a surefire way of redirecting her attention. If the puppy continues to pull, turn around, stop, face her, and make eye contact with her until she sits. Relax all tension on the leash and wait. When she is focused on you again, totally relaxed, only then should you continue the walk. You may have to repeat this several times until your puppy gets the message that you are in control of the walk. When Crystal Reel brought Mr. President home with her during my week-long vacation, she had a different issue on the walk. Sometimes he'd walk as far as he wanted to go, and then he'd just sit down. He's not a fan of long, drawn-out walks, especially when it was warm outside, and he'd get overheated. We had several unseasonable heat waves in Los Angeles that year, and bulldogs are notoriously sensitive to the heat. Crystal solved her problem by adapting to Mr. President's physical needs. On hot days, I tried to break up our walks into smaller 10-minute walks throughout the day. I would also use the scent of food to get him up and moving if he sat down. Another behavior that is totally normal occurs when a puppy gets a little unsure in a brand new place and doesn't want to keep moving forward. When Melissa took Angel on his overnight adventure, the first thing she did was bring him to an outdoor cafe at the top of a flight of marble steps, something he'd never experienced before in his life. Angel merrily trotted across the parking lot on his leash, but when he saw those stairs, he balked. This is perfectly natural, and it's a sign of good instincts, good common sense. Here is a 4-month-old puppy with a brand new person in a new situation that he is unsure of. Instinct is telling him, use your nose, check it out, don't do anything rash. You never want to discourage a puppy that's listening to its instincts. Melissa handled this situation correctly, stopping and letting the tension fall on the leash while Angel took in the stairs. Then, before he could become too overwhelmed, she put the bully stick in front of his nose, then brought him up one step, let him sniff, then another, let him sniff, and so on. After the fourth or fifth step, she upped her pace, and Angel, still a little tentative, but now back in the mode of moving forward, followed along quickly behind her. The same thing happened in her apartment building, but by the third time he faced a flight of stairs, Angel was going up and down like a pro. Common problem 9, crying or whining, 18%. When puppies are separated from their pack in the wild, they will cry out or whine to get their mother's attention. When your puppy cries, it's usually just to get your attention because of either loneliness or a need to eliminate. It's normal for a puppy to whine a little on her first few nights away from her mother and siblings. Remember, we are asking dogs to do something very unnatural when we separate them from their packs, but they do adjust quickly, and being alone comfortably is a skill they are going to need for living with humans the rest of their lives. You want your puppy to develop this ability as soon as possible, to prevent the issue of separation anxiety later. If your puppy starts to cry a little during her first few nights, ignoring is the best medicine. One way to prevent the situation of a puppy that whines or barks from her crate is to make sure she is calm and submissive before you close her in. Never shut the door on an excited, anxious puppy. Wait next to her in silence until she relaxes. Then gently close the door and walk away. Make sure to drain the puppy's energy before bed or quiet times, especially in the early days when she is first getting used to her new environment. If she's happily exhausted, she'll have a lot less energy for whining and be more inclined to simply crash for the night. Also, make sure she pees and poops on a regular schedule so that she's not physically uncomfortable in her crate or sleeping place. Most of my clients with puppies admit that they have a very hard time not responding to a puppy's pitiful cries during those crucial first nights. Diana Foster, of Thin Schmidt German Shepherds, is adamant that new owners take a tough love stance for the good of the dog, not for themselves. It is very important to completely ignore all the noise, regardless of how loud it gets. When dogs are stressed and are trying to work out their frustrations, they will try as hard as they can to get their way. Their behavior will escalate and continue to get worse instead of better. Dog trainers call this extinction burst. Unfortunately, it is just at this point when frustrated owners give in to their dog's demanding behavior, as they just can't deal with it. Had they waited it out for just a short time longer, the behavior would eventually improve. Interrupting the escalation reinforces the exact behavior people are trying to avoid. Soon after it reaches a peak and the dog is absolutely out of control, he will give in and start to settle down. Common problem 10. Excited, 15%, or submissive, 11%, urination. Like housebreaking issues, unplanned urination, whether it is excited or submissive, is another behavior that owners will take serious steps to correct. Again, it seems to be a universal human motto. You can drag me all over the dog park. You can even eat my shoes, but don't you dare stink up my living room. Excited urination is exactly what it sounds like. An overstimulated dog gets caught up in the moment and forgets to control or loses control of her bodily functions. It's the canine version of, "I was so excited I wet my pants." Since it's easy to overstimulate young puppies, and since they are still new to their elimination routine, accidents can happen. The most obvious solution to this problem is to closely monitor the intensity of your puppy's play, not letting her get too overwhelmed by people, places, or things. If the problem seems chronic, you should see your veterinarian to make sure your puppy doesn't have urinary tract problems or a neurological inability to control her bladder when excited. submissive urination is usually found in fearful, nervous, or very submissive dogs that are sensitive and easily overwhelmed. They urinate under stress in a way to overcompensate by showing complete submission and respect. If a dog is overly shy or submissive, make sure all new people she encounters practice the no-touch, no-talk, no-eye-contact rule until the puppy is ready to meet them. If someone in your household or immediate social circle has an overbearing, high-octane, or very assertive energy, that can also ignite the problem, even if your puppy is familiar with that person. Instruct people who seem to trigger your puppy's issues to ignore the dog until it becomes absolutely clear that the puppy is comfortable with them. Chapter 9. Smells Like Teen Spirit. Adolescent Challenges. When I first noticed that 4-month-old Angel was already lifting his leg to pee and showing early signs of marking behavior, it felt to me like the canine equivalent of the time my 9-year-old son Calvin told me he thought it was about time he got himself a girlfriend. I felt that twinge so common to parents everywhere, the wistful realization that my children were growing up all too fast. You won't get a firm consensus from dog behaviorists about the exact moment when canine adolescence begins. The onset of this stage can begin as early as 16 weeks, as with Angel's premature marking behaviors, or it can begin to show as late as 8 months of age. Generally, smaller dogs mature sooner than larger breed dogs. Male and female dogs also tend to grow at different rates. I'm not a dog biologist, but from my years of experience, I've come to view a dog between 6 and 8 months old as a tween, because at 6 months, the mating urge is just beginning to form. At 6 months of age, my sweet Angel turned into a little devil that started humping anything that moved. But because of his general puppy way of being, his behavior wasn't threatening to the other dogs around him. If Angel were a human boy, this would be a little like his becoming curious about a Playboy magazine, but unsure of what to do about it yet. I consider 8 months to be the average age when true adolescence kicks in, a period of sometimes daring and unpredictable behavior that can drag on until your dog is 2 to 3 years of age. During this phase of his life, your dog's brain is still maturing, but his body is nearly full grown. From 6 months to 8 months, your dog will still look and act like a nice, big, cuddly puppy. But one day, you'll wake up and suddenly you won't see a puppy anymore. Your dog won't play like a puppy. He won't growl like a puppy. He won't bark like a puppy. Only in adolescence did Eliza begin barking, Chris Comavez told me when his Wheaton Terrier was nearly a year old. It's mostly in the house, so I think she's becoming a little territorial now that she's older. When she barks, I tell her no, and then ask her to go to her place and relax. Unfortunately, as an adolescent, she made up her own interpretation of that command. She learned to leap into the bay window, bark her head off at the dog passing by, then run to her place and lie down. I realized I'd confused dog training with dog psychology. We now correct her at the window and make her calm down at the spot where she became excited and started barking. Eliza's interpretation of Chris's command in order to suit her whim is a prime example of an adolescent dog who knows the basic rule book but is still trying to see how much she can get away with. As a puppy, your dog was reliant on your constant input and completely driven by the innate desire to follow you and to fit into your pack. An adolescent dog has a mind of its own. The dog begins to test every single limit that you've worked so hard to impose during those previous formative 8 months. If you waver from the program and your dog begins to believe that the rules apply only sometimes, you'll risk establishing negative patterns of behavior that could haunt you for the rest of your dog's life. If you go back to basics and stick to the guidelines you've already set, however, you will have the chance to establish an even deeper bond with your dog and to build a more mature, more meaningful connection. I'm saddened by the harsh fact that far too many owners just give up and fold when a previously well-behaved or at least manageable puppy triples in size and starts pushing the envelope at the same time. The owners have been lulled into a sense of false security and suddenly feel they can't handle all these new challenges. You only have to look at the main age group of dogs surrendered to shelters, says my friend Martin Dealey. 8 months to 2 years. This is the time a dog becomes a backyard dog because he causes too much trouble in the house. It's an indication that something changed in that period. What actually happens is that after beginning well, owners relax because the pup is good, is small, and any developing issues are rationalized away as just being puppy behavior. In a very short time, the dog becomes larger, stronger, more mature mentally, sexually, if not neutered, and personality-wise, more active or even hyper. Now we have the makings of a teenage rebel. This is exactly why I urge my clients to focus on preventing issues or stopping them early on before they become chronic. They must lay down a solid foundation of rules, boundaries, and limitations in puppyhood, and never waver from those basic guidelines, no matter how big or defiant their adolescent dogs become. Physical changes. Your adolescent dog isn't being willful just to spite you. There are a number of significant changes going on in his brain and in his body that are driving some of these frustrating new quirks in his behavior. His permanent teeth either are all the way in or finish coming in, so he goes through a second, sometimes more destructive chewing phase. He may be growing so fast that he has literal growing pains, which can range from mild to severe. His defense drive begins to develop and mature, so fears he may still harbor from a younger age can show up again as either shy or aggressive behaviors. Rapid growth causes joints and plates to become unstable and susceptible to injury, which means that certain vigorous activities may have to be put on hold until his body matures a little more. Older dogs begin to hold the adolescent dog more accountable than they did the puppy, which means new conflicts can develop, seemingly out of nowhere. Sexual maturity. One of the hallmarks of this period is the dramatic rise in the role that sexual hormones play in fueling your dog's behavior. An intact adolescent male dog produces testosterone at a rate several times higher than that of his adult counterpart, which means he will act out his urges in ways that may seem extreme or exaggerated unless he is neutered. Unneutered, a male dog will escalate his behaviors of territorial marking and roaming, and some will start displaying an aggression toward other male dogs, or even humans, that they didn't exhibit during puppyhood. While sniffing another dog's urine on a walk, the sexually intact male dog may fixate on it, stare off into the distance, tracking the direction of the dog that left the mark, and either seem unwilling to leave the landmark, or act all too willing to tear off in pursuit of the mysterious female whose perfume still lingers. Even the best obedience training during puppyhood will often fail to temper this powerful urge. The body of an unspayed female starts gearing up for its first heat cycle when she is only about 6 months old. If you're looking for warning signs of your female preteen's first heat, one of the earliest and most obvious will be the different ways that male dogs react to her. They'll focus in on her right away, usually acting more agitated around her. The female starts sending a scent even before she is fully in heat. It's nature's invitation to male dogs to find and breed with her. Even these premature hormonal cues can aggravate competition and aggression in male dogs, and even neutered male dogs will show some reaction to it. The female in heat may also act a little more playful or flirty with males, standing very still with her tail straight up in the air like a flag to let them smell her. Some female dogs will show swelling in the vulva area, and once the heat begins, there is a little blood discharge. Frequent urination and touchiness, sort of a canine PMS, are also common red flags of estrus. The ethics of spaying and neutering. Next to the food drive, the drive to mate is nature's most powerful passion. A dog's biology dictates that he or she mate every 6 months. When the mating urge is not fulfilled, incredible tension and frustration build up in the bodies of dogs, especially male dogs, that are often discharged as serious aggression. This is when the true primal predator self surfaces in previously peaceful dogs, and they can actually kill each other. In rural Mexico, where I grew up, dogs don't get neutered or spayed. The whole countryside becomes one giant dog park to them. They tend to live very instinctive lives because they do mate freely on the schedule nature intended. For these dogs, there is no sexual aggravation to turn into aggression. On one hand, this more natural lifestyle has created a terrible problem of dog overpopulation that developing nations desperately need to address. On the other hand, dogs in third world countries definitely live much shorter lives than dogs in America. Like their Mexican counterparts, dogs in America have both the ability and the desire to mate. But unlike them, they don't have the opportunity. In the westernized world, our lifestyle, our leash laws, and the way we've made dogs members of our families, not to mention the enormous tragedy of abandoned and homeless dogs in America, make it completely unrealistic for us to allow our pets to mate at will. That's just reality. And that is why I firmly believe that here in America, spaying and neutering is the only ethical choice for those of us who are not professional breeders. We owe it to our dogs to prevent them from having to undergo the extreme physical and psychological suffering caused by not being able to mate when their bodies are screaming at them to do so. When is the right time to spay or neuter your adolescent or preteen puppy? In my opinion, the ideal time is at 6 months of age. Almost all of your dog's major growth has concluded by this point. But the sex hormones have not yet taken over driving his or her behavior. Some breeders of show dogs who are looking to mold perfect physical specimens believe in waiting a couple of months longer to ensure that the dog has finished maturing physically. But I believe that by spaying and neutering at 6 months, we are blocking the brain from receiving those forceful signals from the hormone world. This way, your dog never has to endure the suffering and frustration of needing to mate, but lacking the opportunity. There are so many myths about spaying and neutering, that it changes your dog's personality, that it stunts your dog's development, that it will make your dog fat. If I have earned any influence at all by my work as the dog whisperer, I want to use it to help dispel those myths. There are so many health benefits to early spaying and neutering. Dr. Rick Garcia, one of my favorite vets, agrees. We're preventing testicular cancers, mammary tumors, and other reproductive system cancers. We're preventing perianal hernias and blocking the development of many other conditions a dog can develop from having too many sex hormones building up in its system over a number of years. Some say that dogs are at more risk for obesity if they're spayed or neutered, but if they are fed the correct diet and given regular exercise, there should be no issue with this at all. In my time in America, I have helped hundreds of dogs and owners better understand the operation and prepare psychologically for it. For every one of them, the process has been a positive experience. Nothing physically, psychologically, or spiritually negative has occurred from the operation. The behavioral advantages are huge, Dr. Garcia adds. Neutering prevents marking with urine in the house and around the dog's territory, and the accompanying aggression, which can lead to dominance issues and violence toward other dogs and even members of the family. Neutering makes dogs more manageable, more trainable, more placid pets at home. The only real downside to neutering is that you can't breed the dog. Overall, the benefits far outweigh that. Of course, spaying and neutering do not promise you a magic pill to relieve all unwanted behaviors. Your role as a calm, assertive pack leader and your consistency in fulfilling all your dog's other needs through exercise, discipline, and affection remain your only guarantees against bad habits or issues. But spaying and neutering do ensure that you are removing the rush of hormones to the brain that drives dogs to want to mate, as well as the consequences of their acting out of frustration when they can't. Daddy's Cancer, a cautionary tale. The issue of spaying and neutering became an even more passionate cause for me after my pit bull, Daddy, developed a cancerous transmissible venereal tumor. He survived this life-threatening disease, but had to endure surgery, several days of chemotherapy, and an intensive follow-up holistic regimen with Dr. Marty Goldstein to help his body recover from the toxic after-effects of all the chemo. Daddy was 12 years old at the time and had not been neutered because Daddy's legal owner, a rapper named Redman, was very much against the procedure. Even though he truly did love Daddy, Redman's desire to leave him intact came from an emotional place. With good intentions, he wanted Daddy to have the experience of siring puppies, but Redman forgot to ask himself the question, "When I'm not breeding Daddy, how's that going to affect his quality of life? What will become of that frustration and that powerful drive to mate?" We can't say for sure that Daddy's being intact caused his cancer. From a holistic viewpoint, sexual frustration leads a dog to build up excess testosterone as well as negative energy in his body, which can contribute to creating cancer. Soon after Daddy was diagnosed, I adopted him legally and finally had him neutered. It was very painful seeing a dog that I love so deeply suffer so much. Because I loved him, I was going to spend whatever it took to save his life. It ended up costing more than $10,000. Of course, it was worth it. But that $10,000 could have been put toward my mission in life, which is saving more dogs' lives. Mr. President Gets Snipped. When Mr. President reached his 6-month birthday, I decided it was time for him to go under the knife so that he could go on to live a long, healthy, frustration-free future. "Oh, how could you do that to such a perfect specimen of dog as Mr. President?" an extremely uneducated stranger asked me. The answer is that even though Mr. President is a very handsome dog, there aren't a lot of appropriate females available for him. You don't just go out and place a personal ad for a genetically perfect female English bulldog. I am not a breeder. Lots of people think it's a great idea to breed their dogs, but as you learned in Chapter 2, avoiding the pitfalls of genetic illnesses and behavioral problems is a complicated scientific task that should never be left to amateurs. I come from the point of view of wanting to prevent unwanted puppies growing into dogs that we put to death simply because we can't find homes for them. To me, this is the only real moral outrage, something that creates negative karma for our entire species. By leaving breeding to the pros, we create only healthy dogs for future generations and prevent unwanted dogs from being born into lives of suffering. A trauma-free procedure. Dr. Rick Garcia of Paws and Claws Mobile Veterinary Hospital has been a great friend and supporter of both the Dog Psychology Center and the Dog Whisperer television show for many years now. Dr. Rick has known Mr. President since early in his puppyhood, so I arranged to bring my growing bulldog to his mobile operating hospital on a sunny April morning. In order to ensure that a spaying or neutering, or any veterinary procedure for that matter, is an effortless, positive experience for your dog, it's crucial that you, as the owner, have your emotions in check. Simply put, If you are feeling unsure or guilty about the operation, your dog will feel even worse about it. I hope that by educating yourself on the many benefits of spaying and neutering, you will be going into the situation in the same state of mind in which I approached Mr. President's procedure. I was truly happy and excited for him, and proud to be able to contribute in this way to his future as a stable, balanced bulldog. When we arrived at Dr. Rick's, Mr. President was his usual, playful self. All the work that I had done by exposing him to a variety of people, places, and things during his puppyhood was paying off now, with the little guy seeing all new experiences, not as scary threats, but as exciting new adventures. He had no idea he was going to get neutered. All he knew was the thrill of coming to yet another new environment. Dr. Rick had instructed me not to feed or give water to Mr. President 12 hours before surgery, but I had brought along one of his favorite toys, a stuffed squirrel coated with a special organic scented spray I have developed so I could keep his nose engaged right up until the moment he went to sleep. I would be there to wake him up in the same way, to ensure his waking up in the same state, calm, content, and submissive. When we got to Dr. Rick's mobile van, Mr. President jumped right into it. It's a familiar place to him and the rest of the pack, and has always had good, happy associations for him right from the beginning. He immediately started strutting around, making himself right at home. Dr. Rick and his vet tech, Lizette Barajas, marveled at how much he had grown since the last time they'd seen him. He weighed in at a whopping 39.2 pounds. I engaged Mr. President's mouth with the toy while Lizette petted him. Remember, we had spent many months of his early puppyhood getting him used to being touched in all different parts of his body and associating that with rewards and affection. So when the first injection came, he didn't even notice it. Rick and Lizette were both charmed by Mr. President's bubbly personality. He is a naturally happy-go-lucky guy who simply loves all new humans. "Not all dogs act like this in the vet's office," Dr. Garcia remarked. "But then, not all dogs were raised from the point of view of becoming the role model for the perfect dog." After his first shot, Mr. President seemed just as joyful and curious as when he first came in. He watched Dr. Rick fill his syringe with medication as happily as he would watch me preparing a treat or toy for him to play with. The vet tech held Mr. President's body, and I massaged his jowls and redirected his attention toward me as Rick swabbed his front leg to put the IV in. One more shot, and he quickly drifted off into the land of pink elephants. Once he was asleep and his body totally relaxed, Dr. Rick began the intubation process. For bulldogs, with their unnatural body designs and short noses, it's extra important for us to keep their airways open and keep their necks extended during the whole procedure, he explained. They also made sure to keep his eyes lubricated. In the operating area, Lizette laid Mr. President on a heating pad to keep his temperature constant. Anesthetic drops a dog's temperature about 5 degrees and hooked up his intravenous fluids. Dr. Rick made a delicate elliptical incision around Mr. President's entire scrotal area. He cut out the skin sheath first, then detached the small ligament that attached each testicle to the genital zone. Finally, he stitched up the incision. Because I had asked Rick to take off Mr. President's entire scrotal sac to leave him looking clean and sleek, as well as to prevent some of the skin irritations that can develop when a dog is left with the extra sac hanging, the stitching took a few extra minutes. Even then, the entire procedure was done in just about 15 minutes. There was one final shot. 24 hours of pain and anti-inflammatory relief, plus penicillin. Last, before taking Mr. President to his recovery area, a cozy blanket in a corner of the mobile unit, the vets also drew some blood so they could check his immunity titers. Less than 20 minutes after his surgery began, Mr. President began waking up, trying to sit up right away. He trembled a little bit at first, partly from cold, partly from his body working to release the anesthesia from his system. I engaged his nose with the toy, which caused him to perk right